Part 11, which is entitled Released. As you can imagine, emotions are running high.
On the morning of the 12th of April 1945, we were marched out, counted umpteen times and taken in to be searched before being marched off down to the station, feeling mightily glad it was downhill with all the weight we had to carry. After waiting about for a while in the station yard, some soup and spuds turned up, which were very welcome. Eventually, we got organised, 40 to a cattle truck, and hung our kit to the maximum amount of room for sleeping. Then we got cracking on our smokies, cooking our evening meal. At about 8 o'clock, we were locked in the trucks by the goons. We slept much more comfortably than last time in the cattle trucks, due to the better organisation. But when it came to the attention to the wants of nature, things became far from comfortable, as the blessed posterns wouldn't open the doors for us to get out. Paddy was overtaken by a severe attack of diarrhoea, and even after arguing with them in our best German for over an hour, they wouldn't open up. April the 13th. The morning came and still no signs of moving, which was not surprising given the news that the Yanks were tearing on towards Leipzig, through which we should have to pass. A large amount of the time was spent in trading over the fence with the civilians for bread, vegetables, eggs, etc., for soap, cigarettes and coffee. We didn't manage to get any bread, but were lucky enough to get hold of 4 eggs, a couple of kilos of spuds and a packet of saccharin tablets. During the morning we saw flights of thunderbolts dive bomb the railway at Jutberg, just down the line, and heard several wizard explosions. The news today was really wizzo. The 9th have reached and crossed the Elbe at Medeburg and are now only 40 miles away. Towards the end of the day, it became obvious that we wouldn't be able to move, and the goons told us we were to return to camp in the morning.
April the 14th. We got up early in the morning in order to pack our stuff. The goons have even provided transport for our heavy kit, just as well as we had collected an extra half parcel while down there and had to walk back uphill. The news this morning was very good indeed, and it looks as though the Yanks will be here in a matter of days. When we got back to the camp, we found our barracks cleared out by the BODs we'd left behind, but Betsy was still in position, and we soon got cracking on a slap-up meal of real eggs, bacon, sausages and chips, and boy oh boy did it go down well. The goons have apparently been given orders for their evacuation in the very near future, and seem to think that it may only be 48 hours or so away. It seems that our liberation is in sight, and optimism is really high in the camp. One tragic incident marred all this enthusiasm. Two of our NCOs were shot, attempting to escape. One was killed, and the other died of wounds. Another atrocity to pay the goons back for. April the 15th to the 19th. These last few days have certainly been exciting ones for us. I think I can now pretty safely lift the security ban on my diary and state that we do receive news from other sources than just from the goons. There are American infantry Kriegers in the camp who have been captured on the front not very far away. The Yanks seem to be held up on the Elbe. Rumours have put spearheads and reconnaissance at anything from 15 to 25 miles from here. Our attentions have turned to the Eastern Front because of German reports of a big offensive being launched on the Oder and southeast of here. The Russians themselves are keeping very quiet over the whole affair, and we are rather in the dark as to what is happening. Excitement became high when we were woken on the night of the 19th to be told that the goons were intending to move us westwards at any time owing to a big Russian breakthrough. The SBO is doing all he can to resist the movement. On the food front, it seems as though we've had our last parcels, but we are fairly well in hand, and so we have decided to make a liberation cake to eat when the great day arrives.
April the 20th. Today, as on several previous days, we've had an amazing display of Allied air might, with a mammoth raid by forts on communication targets in this area, one of them only 10 miles away. The climax of a very exciting day was reached, however, when the SBO came round at 10 o'clock at night to address each block. He revealed that, according to reliable sources, the Russians were at three points, one 20 miles northeast of here, another 50 miles east, and also at Jutberg, which is only 8 miles south-southwest of here. He stated that goons had been given orders to defend the camp, but he thought it more likely they would evacuate and leave us here. The defence plan was all ready to go into operation when this happened, and as long as we all remained calm and collected, we should come out of this critical situation okay and would be free soon to return home. April the 21st. This morning the whole camp is in a state of tension. We went to Appell at the usual time, but noticed that all the goons are wearing their side packs, etc. The French and Russian personnel are running around as if they own the place, and the goons seem to be too busy getting ready to buzz off to take any notice of them. It definitely looks as though they're getting out as quick as they can. At 11:30, the big moment arrives. The defence scheme is in operation, which means that the Germans have gone, we are now in charge of the camp, and thus virtually free men. It seems difficult to realise the portent of this last statement, but it is nevertheless true, and although we may have a ticklish and maybe dangerous time to go through yet, we are now literally in the front line and at the mercy of the SS troops, etc., who may be in the neighbourhood. The defence scheme planned weeks ago is well in hand. White flags and flags of the different nationals are flying from prominent points. Guards are posted, gates broken through the wire in places, and as much control as possible exercised on the personnel, although this is rather difficult in the case of the French and Russians, the latter looking sprightlier than I've ever seen them.
Everybody is in a state of terrific excitement and tempted to start bashing, although the SBO has ordered that we are not to start yet. We got an issue of a quarter of a parcel each, which we are told will probably be the last. We had a big bash meal in the evening, both in celebration of our freedom and Sodi's birthday, with the cake which we had originally made for liberation. The great question on everybody's lips at the moment is, when will the Ruskies arrive and where is the German army? General Ruge of the Norwegians has taken control of the camp, and the administration is taken over by our Allied committee, who moved into the Vorlager. Last night we had the biggest firework display since we've been here, a heavy raid on Potsdam and district, and for the first time the Berlin defences really went to town. The whole hut shook with the guns and bombs and was illuminated by continual flashes and searchlights. During the day, and way into the night, the sounds of warfare grew gradually closer, and we all wondered how we were going to cope when the front line came through us. April the 22nd. Our night's sleep was rather restive owing to our excitement and artillery and small arms fire getting perilously close. One rather nasty moment was caused by an aircraft diving down and strafing just a few yards outside the camp. Whether he was aiming for the camp or not, he certainly scared everybody in the camp. In fact, after that, every time an aircraft was heard, we were all out of our pits and on the floor. At 6 o'clock in the morning, excitement rose to fever heat again. I've never seen everybody up so early since I've been a Kriegie. The reason? A shout by somebody, "The Russians are here!" And they were, though only one car and a couple of chaps walking. The whole camp was out lining the wire cheering them, and the place really looked as though it had gone mad. This was nothing, though, compared with the scene about an hour or so later, when in rolled 7 or 8 Rusky tanks, followed by about a dozen lorries loaded with troops and equipment and towing guns and mortars, etc. This was really it, liberation in the true sense of the word, the thing we'd all been waiting for so long.
The troops looked really rough types. We were surprised at their lack of personal equipment, no tin hats and no respirators. There was even a woman on one of the trucks. After going up to the Russian quarters, they turned round and came back again, one of the tanks barging out of line and pushing part of the barbed wire down on our side. the huge poles just going down like matchsticks. We promptly got hold of the poles and chopped them up for firewood. After this excitement, things quietened down a bit for the rest of the day, although there was much activity on the administration side. Wireless sets came out in the open from nowhere. Unfortunately, I stopped keeping my diary after our Russian allies reached our camp, presumably because I was expecting to be on my way home pretty soon. If this was so, how wrong I was. I would like to add some personal memories of our Russian imprisonment and what happened from then on. One of the first things we noticed after the initial lot of tanks went through was that the Russian troops immediately gave rifles to the Russians in the compound opposite and presumably told them to get out on the front line and fight. This was after months of terrible treatment by the Germans. We had seen them having to pull heavy carts down the main street and beaten them if they stumbled under the weight.
As far as we were concerned, the first lot of occupation troops couldn't do enough for us. They must have ransacked the local town and brought us sides of meat, vats of butter and sacks of sugar, amongst other goodies. We were warned by our own people, though, to go very easy on all of this, as after the almost starvation diet we'd been on, we could be horribly ill if we gorged too much at once. In addition to the foodstuffs, they also bought dozens of radio sets that they had pinched off the good burghers of Luckenwalde, so we had one between each group of four or five of us. This was all very well, but naturally our first priority was to get home. But there seemed to be no signs of this from the final occupation force, who had now taken over. After a while, the food ran short and we were given very little by the Russians, and of course Red Cross parcels were a distant memory. The Russians allowed us to take walks outside the camp. One day, walking around the agricultural area around the camp, we came across a couple of dead Germans. More important to us, a farmer had recently planted his potato crop. With our lack of food, this was too good an opportunity to miss, so we dug up as many as we could carry in sacks we found lying around and took them back to our quarters. This provided a lifeline to us for quite a while. In May, and we heard on our radios that the war in Europe was as good as over, and servicemen and POWs were being repatriated from all over, but no sign of any movement for us. We had visits from high-ranking Russian officers, but there seemed no efforts to move us. We listened on our radios to all the VE Day celebrations, but we had no reason to cheer. The River Elbe, about 30 miles west of us, had been agreed as a dividing line between the Americans and Russians, and we learnt later that the two governments were arguing as to how many Allied POWs would be exchanged for how many Russians. We are being used as pawns in a political game.